There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel
in. Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention!
Government
is an emergency.
Repeat,
an emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, man, I'm Chinese, man. You can't understand a word you say, man. They just try to listen to the whole upside down and whatnot.
Turn off this fan. Turn off the fan. Turn up the mics. Set the fires. Kick the tires. Something like that. Wow, it's Monday already. August 23rd, 2010. This is the Liberty Experiment known as the Dutch Jones radio program. Raspy voice and all, fighting one of them summer colds. Summer colds are the worst. But everybody up here's got them. Now it's just my turn. And who am I? I am Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones radio program. Lou forgot his headphones, but he will be back in the room momentarily. He just ran out, so I don't even know if we're up and live. Moments before going on the air, as usual, the computers crash. I am not in the chat room right now because every time I try to get in the chat room, I think it takes us down the battle over bandwidth. But we strive to get the message out. We battle not against just men and principalities and thoughts. We battle against technology. And it's not always because the enemy's commanding the technology. It's just the frailty of modern inventions and where we choose to stand and how the message gets out from here. Boy, my voice. It sounds terrible in the headphones. I apologize. It sounds like sandpaper headphones. It's kind of like listening to Rod Stewart real loud. I can't do a Rod Stewart impersonation. If I try to yell, I'll probably cough. So I got to turn the mic up real loud, and I got to whisper. So I apologize. It's kind of like, hey, how you doing? But that doesn't mean I won't do a show, especially since we only had half an hour looping on you broadcast because we had so many crashes on Friday. Again, make sure you go to dutchjones.tk, dutchjones.tk, and it'll say listen to past shows, past, past shows. I don't know if that's grammatically correct. And you'll find the archive there that Olima has done. And if you're in the room, thank you. All of those of you that are in the room, I can't see. Are we still up and running, Lou?
Yeah.
Yeah, who's all in the room? Give me a shout out. Give me a roll call.
Orland, Scotty38.
Moreland, Scotty38, Stacy and Olima are in the chat room. Thank you very much. Our morning crew is here. We were taking naps up until about half an hour. Go ahead, plug it all the way in. There you go. Naps up until we came on the air here, just fighting this cold. Now Lou's taking off to go do a latrine stop. I think there's something wrong with that boy. That's like the 18th time today he's done a latrine call. Well, that's kind of weird. We've been on the road all day taking care of business down in the population. Didn't have a whole lot of time to read over the emails, although it was kind of light today, only about 50 emails. And what's happening in the world, I didn't get a chance to do that at all. Mostly because I'm not feeling that well. But what I am going to share with you is a couple things. I'm going to talk about in the next half hour and then the hour on Liberty Tree Radio. We're going to talk about preachers, significant preachers who cultivated liberty in the 1700s. Being this is Monday, I like to try and keep a little more spiritual on Mondays, although that's always the flavor of the show. If you're new to the show or you're listening to a replay and it's the first time you've ever listened to it, we strongly believe in the Christian mandate that all liberty comes from the Lord, Jesus Christ. And we share that. This is a militant Christian show. It's not just a militant rebellious show. I believe that rebellion is witchcraft, but resistance is duty. So you guys get that. So you won't hear me saying, oh, we're rebels. You know, I'm a Southern rebel. We may play songs that have it in there because I don't, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's hardcore legalist and I'm going to turn down a song because it has the word rebel in it. You know, I understand what the people are saying. But we do resist. We resist because it is a duty to our Lord Jesus Christ. No king but King Jesus, you will hear me say. Over the weekend, before I get into the training that we did and give you a training report, we watched again, and I can never watch it enough, Johnny Tremaine, which is a old Disney film. I don't know the year it was made, but it's about the Sons of Liberty and basically about it goes from the Boston Tea Party to the battles of Lexington and Concord and how the revolution what led up to that moment, and then when the match was actually struck and the first fire shot heard around the world. And they brought in, I think, what was his name? Otis. James, was it James Otis? They were having the final meeting of the True Sons of Liberty, and they had to round everybody up. And there was a gentleman by the name of Otis who helped found them, but he had had a severe head trauma. They didn't go into what it was, and I planned to research it, but I didn't. But he gave this great speech. And I'm going to steal completely from his speech throughout probably this whole next week, because it fits the time right now. What he was saying was set, you know, in 1775, but it was exactly like today. And it's dealing with how do we know when it's time to take up arms and fight, even in this day and age when there are no gallows, there are no outright firing squads. We don't need that to indicate. We don't have to wait for that to happen. To fight tyranny, why should we wait for the firing squads and the gallows? But in a way, there are firing squads and gallows, because the emotional tyranny that goes on, the psychological tyranny that goes on, the physical taking of people's property and personal rights is enough. So you're going to see that theme, and I'm going to learn more about this Otis guy, because he was, in this movie they made him out. He had a very small vignette of a couple appearances, and when he thanked the youth for shedding their blood on that day, you know, on Lexington and Concord. It was moving to me. I don't know if anybody, and I didn't ask anybody else in the room, but that whole speech, for the first time, I've watched that film about 11 times now, I think it is. But for the first time ever, the speech by James Otis in there, and if I get the first name wrong, I'll get it later. But his name was Otis, and it moved me, because it fit today. It was like a rock thrown from our past. And even if Disney'd it up, but it was great. It was a great speech on liberty and freedom, and it was good, because that was our Saturday night movie.
It was James Otis.
Yeah, thank you, James Otis. What was his, do you have any more information on him? Okay, Lou's my little engineer, my little producer over there. He's not little anymore, but my producer.
There's two of them, senior and junior.
Yeah, so we need to do a whole show on James Otis and what he had to do. Today we're going to talk about the pastors of the American Revolution. But let's get back to the training. It was good and everything. And on Sunday we had a guy come all the way from Washington State and sat in on the training. And for those of you that don't remember, our little party in the park that we have, our party in the park. We do those every 3 months. Actually, we've been doing them every month, haven't we? We've actually been doing them every month, where we do like a Saturday event and a Sunday event. And this one's turning into like an every Sunday thing, because the reception of my class was so good by the students. They want me to expand on it and do it again next Sunday, more advanced stuff. And we'll talk about that. I'm not just bragging, but it shows the hunger of our congregation to want to know about these things that are matters of liberty, matters of importance, and that does really well. Now, what we were covering this last weekend was fire making. You're going to say, what's the militia have to worry about fire making? And use of compass and map. Very introductory, you know, how the military uses compasses and map. We were using military compasses and quadrangle maps, and I wanted to familiarize them with terminologies and things like that. And then on Sunday, I took an in-depth response to a mass casualty incident, whether it's terrorist or natural disaster course that the Office of Emergency Management puts out, FEMA, whoever you want to call it. I heavily modified it, created my own slideshow, used some of our own photos in it from our own trainings to try and motivate people. Now, as a trainer, if you're a trainer out there, you've got to do everything you can to build esprit de corps. And I believe if you've got a bad commander, and I'm not saying bad as in you can't trust him, but bad just because he doesn't have good leadership skills, but hey, he stepped up or she stepped up to organize this group, you can really help that person out by making your training both informative, fun, and spiritually strong. And I mean all sense of spirit. Spirit in the group, spirit in the cause, spirit in the Lord. And you have a duty to do that. And I spend, for about every hour that I speak, I spend about 2 to 3 hours preparing. Minimum. So to do a whole weekend, that gives you an idea how much time I spend on it. We did the fire making stuff. We did the, you know, all the commercially. I told people to bring their fire making materials. You know, you can buy these mechanical matches and all that. And we found that most of them are a pain in the patootie to use.
In the ideals.
Ideal. We had a dry, light breezed, all the kindling we could ever want. We could have set fire to the entire community if we weren't paying attention. Let's put it that way. We live in a tinderbox this time of year in the Cahuilla Commonwealth, in the belly button of California. And we had the hardest time starting fire the old-fashioned ways. Now, we didn't even try rubbing two sticks together. I showed people how to do those kind of things. But ideally, preparation prevents what? You know, piss-poor performance. So why struggle and set yourself up for failure going, well, all I need is my pocket knife and you can drop me into any jungle and I can make a fire rubbing two sticks together? Why do that? You know, why set yourself up for failure? I mean, I know if that happens, you should have that skill set. But I can tell you, making a bow fire set, you know, the old Indian style, Native American, what am I supposed to call them? I don't know. Indigenous people's fire bow set. 99 times out of 100, you're using the wrong kind of wood because you're not an expert on the wood. And you spend all day there, and because of humidity and things, it's not going to work. A fire trough where you rub sticks together, and you know, like you're making a little tiny canoe. It's very hard to do. When you see it on TV, you see it in the training videos. You don't. They never tell you how long it's going, unless it's a good training video. They tell you how long it really takes. You Boy Scouts and stuff out there, unless you practice it all the time, it's not a skill that you're going to be able to use in a dire survival situation. So why set yourself up for failure? Number one. Get all these Strike Anywhere matches you can possibly buy. They are cheap. It was $4 for, I think I got 300 matches at the hardware store, and that's up here in a tourism community. And I stuffed them in everything. Pill bottles, you know, you can buy commercially made match-keeping dry places. Practice with a couple of them, find out what they will strike on and what they won't. I found out that my magnesium fire starter brick, they light great on that. We tried all those things, the sparkers, everything. We couldn't get a fire started in ideal situations. You can buy all these kindling mixtures and gels and little bricks of kindling and stuff. You know what works best? I went to the dollar store and I bought a gigantic tube of liquid nails. Not the kind you use in a caulking gun, but a big tube of it. And I threw that in my survival kit. You take a little bit of that liquid nails and you put it on a stick and light it. You've got a torch fit for chasing Frankenstein with. A little dab will do you. It was funny because we're all sitting around. I'm on the ground. We're all trying. All these people are breaking out their mechanical things for starting fire. And I'm trying. And I ended up burning my finger because, you know, it was heating up even though I was pushing the little sparker and everything. I said, but watch this, folks. I pulled out my little out of my cargo pouch. I pulled out my liquid nails, and I put about a nickel-sized dab in the middle of my fire kindling pile. A nickel-sized dab. Then I stacked sticks around it, like made a little log cabin of sticks. I took my Strike Anywhere match and just set it in there. The thing went woof, and the whole thing caught on fire. Why? Set yourself up for failure. Why? Now, I can start fire with my magnesium striker. I can go get, you know, the size of a woman's head of hair of dry kindling and put it in there, shelter it, blow on it, spark it. And I can do that. And we carry those magnesium strips in every one of our kits. Right, Lou?
Yeah.
Now that you found where yours was. Did you put it in your pack?
No.
You haven't put it in your pack yet. Make sure it gets in your pack today. Okay? After the show, I want you to put it in your pack. And, you know, I can use a magnesium strip. I can use a lighter that's got no more fuel in it, but you can rotate the sparker. Learn how to do those things, by all means. I'm not saying don't learn them. But why? If you just plan and in your little fanny pack, your little butt pack on your LBE, you put a couple hundred matches in there. How much do a couple hundred dry Strike Anywhere matches weigh? Nothing, my friends. put them in pill bottles, stick them in your pockets. One thing, if you're using Strike Anywhere matches, take some extra kindling and pack it in there around them in whatever container you're putting in so they don't move, because friction will cause them to rub together. And I have seen people set their pockets on fire with Strike Anywhere matches in them if they start running or stuff like that. I have seen it physically happen. I've seen keep dry match cases, not the metal ones, but the plastic ones, melted because it caught on fire. But so you put the matches in the tube, in the top of the tube. What you do is you stuff it with known kindling to things. We use dryer lint. We collect dryer lint. It's all over the place. It's even if you're using flame retardant materials, that lint that comes off of them doesn't retain that quality. So it was good there. Debbie had collected up. Oh, I gave out your code name. I should use your code name. Fire Eagle One. No, I don't know. She collected up a bunch of kindling for us, and we from just the local area. And there are some things that were just woof, would just take off. You've got to know your immediate area, the materials in it. Bamboo, I don't want to say shavings, but the leaves that come off of the bamboo shoots that we have around here burn very, very fast and very good. So you got to have a big pile of it. We learned, we taught, and everybody pretty much got this, that have your kindling go from small to big. Start out with small, brittle stuff, grasses, leaves, papers if you have them. And another thing, I know I've said it before, but a lot of envelopes, we've tried to set fire to envelopes, they're treated with something so they don't burn in the machinery. So, you know, saving all your junk mail may not be a good way to start fire in the field. They will burn when superheated, but starting out with them won't be good. So you want to start with the smallest pile possible of kindling, and a big pile. Why not start with a big pile? And then work it up. But make sure you collect all of your materials, because a fire needs to be fed. So you're sitting there, especially if you're by yourself and you're not working the buddy system, you know, you get your fire going, then you start running around looking for the next bigger size of wood to get your fire going. It's too late. You know, you've got to tend your fire. You've got to establish fire guards if you're in a platoon-sized group. Keep that fire going all night long. A survival fire is critical. I mean, a comfort fire, you know, a situation like where we are right now, I don't necessarily need a fire to stay alive. You know, but in a survival situation where hypothermia, let's say you fell in a river, you rolled your canoe, you parachuted and hit the reservoir, you know, if you were in a reservoir, you'd have people around to help you. But, you know, in a secluded area and your body temperature's dropping, high desert, low desert scenario, shelter and warmth are key to survival, even more so than food and water in the first few hours. So keeping a fire going all night, you know, having a shelter, learning how to set up the shelter. We talked about how to build a fire pit. I showed them that if you've got ground that's wet, you should have in your pack sheets of aluminum foil for all different reasons. Signaling, cooking, making your aluminum foil hat so the microwaves don't hit you. Huh?
And wrap it around
your fish when you catch them to protect them, you know.
I mean, in your gear.
Yeah, wrap it around. Put it in.
No room, so just wrap
Yeah, people who think you don't have enough room, if you've already packed your pack to capacity, you're probably carrying too much stuff or you have too small a pack. That's one thing you need to know. But because what if you're gathering food or procuring items off of the dead bodies? You want to have a little bit of room in your pack anyway. Just a little nugget out there I throw you. But aluminum foil, you could use your entrenching tool or your knife to dig a pit in the ground, even if it's wet. Stick your aluminum foil in it, and you've created a barrier between the moisture, and you can build your fire in that. We talked about if you have no pots, pans, or anything to boil water, you can even dig a hole, let the water go in it, take your rocks from your fire, drop it in, boil your water that way. Sure, it's going to taste like dirt, but you're going to have water. What were some of the other things we went over with fire? Keeping transport a fire. You can create a fire vessel out of a larger piece of timber, make a punk out of it, and carry your fire and transport in case you didn't prepare and you only got one match. Move your fire from camp to camp. We talked about search and rescue stuff with a fire. Three fires equally spaced is a unit. Well, three anything equally spaced that gets attention, motion, color, will get attention to rescuers. We talked about self-rescue versus sitting in place. If you have no training at all, just sit in place. Stay with the car if you get trapped in a snowbank. You know, make sure you have a visibility area. Stamp out an SOS. Three big circles in the snow is good enough. If you're a city slicker and you've never had any training, stay with the vehicle. Stay with the vehicle. Stay with the vehicle. But if you've got some kind of training, some kind of preparedness, and you know that you staying up on that mountaintop is going to bring on hypothermia and you're going to die, then self-rescue. And there are different tactics involved in that. But fire building is key for signaling, for cooking whatever food you may capture. for making weapons, hardening. A simple wooden spear, whittled to a point with your Swiss Army knife and then hardened in the fire. A great defensive weapon, depending on where you're at. You may need it for two-legged or four-legged adversaries. So we went over that. The fire is key for doing just about anything you want to do. We talked about Dakota fires. You don't need to make a gigantic fire to survive. I always call it a white man fire. Ever since I saw Dances with Wolves, that only a white man would make a fire like that. A big, gigantic bonfire. We talked about how some hunters, especially here in California, God help the hunters in California, they'll get lost. They think, they're about ready to die, so they set fire to a mountainside to get rescued. That's resulted in loss of fire, dead fire, or loss of homes. A couple of firemen have been killed because hunters set fire, or one guy launched a flare. He shot a flare in there, and when it came down, it set fire to the mountainside. We had one guy, he said, well, just bring a flare everywhere you go. You can start a fire. Okay. I've actually done that in extreme cold weather situations, i.e. Fort Carson, Colorado. I wanted to build a fire quick because we were sweaty and nasty and hypothermia was very... So I told everybody to gather firewood and I just stuck a flare in it. Why not? If you've got a flare, use it. Might be better to save it later to signal aircraft or something. But that's good. Do what you can. And, of course, make sure you put your fire out when you leave the area. Do the best you can to put it out. Turn it. Urinate on it. Don't waste your drinking water. Bury it in sand. Don't pour water on a fire, especially if you're in a survival situation. Even if you're in a military situation or martial law, don't waste your water to put out a fire. But you've got an entrenching tool. Turn it. Urinate on it. Turn it some more. You don't want to have a fire, to your rear while you've got enemy to your front because you were negligent.
You have the electric fence, though.
Yeah, don't pee on the electric fence. I don't know where that came from, Lou, but at least I know you're awake. Boy. So that training was good. We're running out of time here in the first half hour. Boy, this is catching up to me. Compass stuff. Everybody had a compass, didn't know how to use it, which was exactly why I did the class. Everybody buys a compass, they don't know how to use it. When I was in the Army, we spent about 2 days on compass using. Actually the physical part of the compass. It took me a week to figure it out. I'm not a genius when it comes to orienteering, which is the process of using the compass in relationship to the map. But basically, I show people how to use a map to find out where they were using the compass. If you didn't have a map, I showed them how to at least follow a bearing, how to keep pace, how to use those that had military-style compasses, the difference between buying a $12 one and a $60 one, because we had both those there, how a good military compass is worth its weight in gold, but a cheap compass is basically you put it on the end of a stick and swing it to hit yourself with for being stupid for buying one. Lensatic compasses, sighting along the line. We learned that a lot of us older folks can't use lensatic compasses, even with our eyeglasses on. Being able to sight it, you can sight the mountain peak or the saddle that you want, and then you look down and you're supposed to be able to see what it says on the compass. Lou and a couple of the other younger folks can do it, but the three of us older guys that were in the class were like, I can't read it. So I use a Girl Scout compass, the big plastic kind that you just lay on the map and orientate to the map. We talked about true north, magnetic north, and map north. Those are three things you need to find out about. The reason I'm sharing this with you is not to educate you, but so the next time we have one, you show up. Or if you're not able to show up to our this is a public training. If you're not able to show up to it, you should be doing these things in your own community, in your own group. And if you're a lone wolf, you've got to be training yourself in these skills in case, God willing, the creek don't rise, martial law is enacted, and you show up here, at least you have the basic skills so we can utilize you in the optimum and not in the minimum. Boy, I only got like 3 minutes. I'm not even halfway through our training. Wow. And then we had spontaneous training, i.e. removing an individual from the church. That was good. We'll talk a little bit about that maybe after the break. Maybe I'll do, I think what I'll do for this first hour is I'll do as much of the review on the training and highlighting it, and then the second hour we'll talk about the preachers. And that way we can share all of that information with our massive, huge Liberty Tree Radio audience. So that's what we'll do. But on the compass issue, you got to get USGS maps to use them to their optimum, but they will work with other kind of maps. We talked about pre-planning any trip you go into. Tell at least two people where you're going to be and stay within those parameters of the area. Let's use the hunting scenario. I don't like anybody doing anything alone, but I know you guys are going to do it. If you're going to go hunting alone, tell two people when you're leaving, when you're expected to be back, where your car is going to be parked. Leave a note in your car. I'm going to be hunting this grid, but from this grid. I expect to be back at this time, no later than this, you know, this on this date, no later than this time. If anything goes wrong, I will rally at this mountaintop. If I'm injured, I will probably be along the, you know, you come up with pre-planning is everything in this, folks. Study your maps. There's nothing worse than, you know, where are we? I have no idea. Well, did you look at the map before we came in? No. Even on a route, even a cross-country road trip, you should pre-run in your head the routes. What happens if there's construction? Can you take a secondary route? You know, what happens if you shoot that elk and he wanders off into an area you're not going to be in? Do you have materials with you to mark your trail? Engineer tape and thumbtacks, or just tying them on branches? Orange engineer tape is critical for it, and I had forgotten about that. That was something I learned in hunter safety in Colorado, and we had a hunter who's actually up here deer seasons right now. So he came up to hunt in the twilight times, and then he joined our class, and then he went hunting again after the class. It was pretty cool. And bagging himself an animal, and so he carried engineer tape, orange engineer tape, and that was interesting. So that really lightweight, doesn't add a lot of weight, plus you can mark your trail. So if you can get into an area chasing an injured animal, you can get out of an area. Plus if you get injured, professional rescuers can go, hey, you know, if somebody marked this, let's check it out. Maybe they'll find you at the bottom of a ravine, you know, with your femur sticking through your thigh. You know, they'll listen to you whimpering and they'll find you because you marked your trail. So prior planning is critical. On compasses, I taught them that you cannot use your compass near anything metal. I love it when, especially in the movies, they do this. They lay their map out on the hood of a car, and then they set their compass down on the map. We used a Gerber tool. We set our map down on the ground. This is the way you should do it if you're going to unfold the whole thing. Orientate your compass to, you know, to the north on the map. Point your map north. Set everything up, and then we set a Gerber tool down, and it was like 45 degrees off. So when I come back, we're going to talk more about our training. We're going to go more into what kind of things, the minimum things you'll need. And we will be back after the break. Thanks for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio program.
Best conditions, the human body will die after 3 days without water. Having access to clean, drinkable water in a disaster, survival situation, or military action is critical when putting together your survival plan and survival kit. Whether you choose to boil, filter, purify, or use some type of chemical treatment, something must be done when planning your survival, escape routes, and plans, and putting together your bug-out bag or simply your rucksack. That's why I have chosen to offer Sawyer brand water filters. These filters used in the medical medical industry for kidney dialysis exceed the needs for water purification. With different units available, the basic unit that you should get will be capable of filtering up to 500 gallons a day and will not need to be replaced until you have surpassed 1 million gallons through that filter. I know that's hard to believe, but it's a fact. They've been using these filters overseas for years in the missionary fields and in post-disaster recovery efforts. The filters are lightweight and simple to use, so whether you attach it to a 5-gallon bucket, to a water bladder, or to a 10,000-gallon tank, these filters can do the job for you. They can handle up to 40 PSI, and with different fittings and ingenuity, you can even apply them to inside, inline water supply systems into your house, cabin, or survival structure. So I'm asking you to go to djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer water filters. Order them through us. You will save at least $5 off the retail price of buying them from Sawyer Direct. And as always, the money goes to help the radio ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So, do something right for your family, get them prepared for a disaster or calamity, and you're helping us out. So don't forget, djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer brand water filters.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I tell you what, man, you want me to fly in cow, man, you go load up them dynamite and old can like that, you go to boom, man, that old cow fly out all over the place.
I didn't know you had recordings of my dad, Lou. That sounded exactly like my dad, Dutch Senior. That was Boomhauer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'd never heard that. I mean, it sounded tinny and old-timey. Did you do something to that to make it sound better?
No.
Usually I can't understand a word he says. That was pretty good, Lou. Boom, blow up a cow. We don't condone the cruelty to cows here.
Except the two-legged kind.
Except two-legged cows that come in here and do bad things. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. It is Monday. The 23rd of August. August is dragging on. The dog days of summer. That's what this is talking about, I think, when they came up with that. We spent the day down in the valley. I just found out I slept on the way back. I guess only two people stayed awake in the vehicle. Is that right?
What?
Was the driver was one of them. Stacy stayed awake, and our studio audience member here, she was able to stay awake. But me, Lou, and some other folks, people in the back of the bus, were all snoring all the way back up and down. Just fighting this cold. If you're just joining us, I know I just got some emails from people on Facebook that said they're just joining us now, listening on the Facebook feed. Thank you very much. No, this is not a stand-in host. It's just the way my voice is sounding because I've had a cold, you know, a summer cold. And I'm loading up with vitamin C and vitamin supplements and all that kind of stuff. And now Lou's yawning in my face. Don't do that, Lou. No yawning, Lou. You're supposed to say I'm sorry.
No.
Lou's over there yawning. I'm trying to stay awake. We took a nap when we got back all the way up to the show. What I'm sharing with you folkies, the people that are decent enough to listen to what I have to say, what we did over the weekend. Now, these trainings, we do them usually the third weekend of every month, you know, third Sunday at the very least. But this time, because there's like 18 Saturday weekends in August or something, it's kind of weird. There were like five Sundays, right? Did we end up with five Sundays in August?
Yeah.
Lou looked it up for me. So we moved it around a little bit. But normally on the third weekend of the month, we will have at least a Sunday afternoon training. So, and it's open to the public. It's not one of our regular martial trainings. It's usually survival, disaster preparedness, historical, you know, educational, something along those lines. We've had search and rescue instructors come in on those days. I teach most of the classes. And this weekend what we did is we did fire starting. We did intro to compass and map usage and just, you know, Trek survival. Not Star Trek, just we're going out on a trek and basic stuff just to get people, you know, thinking in that process, how to plan a trip, you know, that kind of thing. And what we do is we have a playground that's nice and shady and grassy, and we go out there and we meet and we go through the stuff. We stay overnight. We watch training videos in the church. We, like this time, I think only one person brought a tent, and we need to talk to him about that. But we all slept on the ground with what we had, you know, what we brought, and it was really good. Lou had no problem at all. I thought, yeah, you know,
except it was cold.
Yeah, Lou was a little cold. He stole our blankets, but because we brought one sleeping bag, one blanket, and Stacy and I just threw the sleeping bag down for insulation and then did the blanket. But Lou just rolled out. Was it a mummy bag that you had?
No, it was
just a regular sleeping bag. Like, I think he brought his, because it's been 100 degrees here, so we thought, you know, we'd be okay. But it didn't get cold, Lou. It got chilly, I think, is what it did. But it was interesting because we were harassed by animals all night. Errant cows. We have cows, calves to be more exact, that escaped the ranchers from around here, and they wander around through our neighborhoods. And the cows were coming through, and there's nothing funnier in the middle of the night, turn on your flashlight and seeing a large black object coming straight for you. They weren't green eyes, they were blue eyes. They were kind of weird. And the deer have green eyes. It's one or the other, I can't remember which. And we realized those were calves, you know, yearlings and a little bit bigger coming around. The deer were very upset because we were sleeping where they sometimes sleep. Because, you know, we'll water during the day and the grass is nice and cool and they like to lay in it. And they don't eat it. For some reason, they don't eat the grass in the playground. And so they had to be across the road, and they just kept staring at us. Like, what are you doing? That's my place. What are you doing there? And then early in the morning, Stacy, and I'm glad she's not in the room, slugged me in the stomach, screamed, shot up because a squirrel in the tree above us started screaming. I thought the squirrel was under the sleeping bag with us. I thought the punch to my stomach was the squirrel. I wish she was here because it was funny. It's like, and we're all, and you know, Debbie's all, squirrel, you know. So squirrel was up in the tree howling at us because we were interfering with his daily shopping or whatever. So it's funny, the animals, even in a urban interface built up area like this, the animals don't like it when humans come in and sleep. We had a fire all night long. Another thing that I want to talk to you guys about when we get back into it, we bring pie tins. Pie tins are lightweight, you know. I use them for a plate. I use them for gathering water, all kind. But we use them for a fire. I just set it down, and that was the biggest fire we had all night. You know, we sat around the fire talking about stuff, talking politics, discussing, you know, what gear we'd like to do, the direction of the group. Oh, and that's one thing I didn't mention. A lot of talk out there. People are saying that they're going to ban militias in different states. Even Oklahoma's doing it. I finally contacted our folks in Oklahoma. And this, the reason I'm bringing this up is it leads into the next thing that I'm going to tell you, what we call our group. And the House and the State Assembly did pass a bill saying that a militia, being in a militia, you can get a $500 fine and go to jail, all that. But the governor's going to veto it. Whoever came in the room the other day had half the information. I talked to, we have a legislative analyst that listens to this show from the state of Oklahoma. I'm not going to use his name because I don't think he wants people to know. But I can tell you this, that State Senator Key, who is a pro-militia guy, who was in Camp FEMA, who was in Don't Tread on Me, we have a direct line to that person through the show because he listens to this show. And between those two, I was able to find out the truth that the governor's going to veto it. But it's scary that it got that far. So one of the big discussions that I got into over the weekend, I was in kind of a round robin discussion group in a forum with different militia type people. And I could go either way on this. Instead of using the word militia, a lot of groups are just, you know, committees of vigilance, committees of correspondence. They're going back to, like, you know, terms that were used in the American Revolution. We had decided long ago here, probably 3-4 months, not long ago, but recently, I guess I should say, to use the Emergency Response Family moniker, ERF, which is funny because the militia that I left in Southern California was ERF. It was Emergency Response Force. And I didn't come up with the name at either time. But it was just weird that both of the groups that I'm involved in is ERF. Do, do, do. We should do the Twilight Zone thing. I don't know how to do Twilight Zone. Do, 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 do. But Emergency Response Families. So this way, when our pastor went to the sheriff, hey, we're going to do our little group, and we're going to do our thing, and it's going to be all, you know, training and all this stuff. This is what the sheriff told our pastor when he went to him. He says, that's great. I'm 100% with you. And the pastor goes, you know, it's really a militia, though. But we're just calling it ERF. Because our pastor, you know, he's not going to lie unless it, you know, it's to save lives or something. It's about saving lives. Biblical doctrine of deception. We've gone over that. But he told him, he says, yeah, but we're going to call it to make it easier on our neighbors, to make it easier on the press, emergency response families. And this is what the sheriff said. He goes, that's great, because we have no plan for your community up there. In a major disaster, a forest fire, God forbid, aliens invade, meteorites hit, you're on your own. The sheriff looked at me and I said, you're on your own. We have no plan for you. They took our ambulance away. In the last week, we lost our ambulance. Our fire department's down to one guy. And then he has to page people for them to come in if there's a fire. The nearest community that has an ambulance for us, I'm going to say 35 to 45 minutes away, Exeter. Lemon Cove? Lemon Cove has an ambulance?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know Exeter has an ambulance. But fire from Lemon Cove, that's right, coming into Lemon Cove. So 30 minutes for fire, 45 minutes for ambulance. And the sheriff is like, this is great. So this next phase that we went into, and we're finishing the first day, the second day, what I did is I took the community emergency response team training, which if you've been listening to the show, you know I used to be an instructor for the government. I worked for FEMA for a long time. I've trained thousands of people in communities all over Southern California, specifically San Bernardino and Riverside County. I made big bucks. Your tax money kept me in houses and root beer and donuts for several years. And what I would do is I would teach 2 to 3 3-day courses a month. Plus, I did other stuff for the fire department, all that, you know. But I would go into communities and teach them basic disaster preparedness. And this is prior to Y2K. Following Y2K, it was response to terrorist incidents, how to spot terrorists and turn them in and all that kind of stuff. So we're doing that up here now, and we're calling it ERF. ERF, ERF. We are in the process of getting our own firefighting vehicle. And that's one of the benefits of having the sheriff go, hey, that's great, knock yourselves out. Because then we can reach out to surplus Navy, military, fire trucks from bigger municipalities and say, hey, look, we're disaster preparedness. We're going to put together our own little spontaneous response group. We're not going to use it to fight fires on a daily basis. We're just going to use it in a major disaster incident. And we talked about this a little bit on Friday. The mass casualty incident is anything that immediately overwhelms your local resources. Well, we have no local resources. We've got the full-time fire captain from CDF that lives at the fire station, but he's by himself, and he can't leave under union rules until he has at least two other firemen with him. Actually, I think it's three, because I think it's two in, two out. I think is California law, or, you know, operational code. It's probably OSHA. Is anybody even saying anything in the chat room?
No.
Okay, because I thought my link wasn't up. Maybe, once again, they just turned it on and they're all eating dinner or something. They're liking having me in the background. That's good. But so that's what we're doing up here. We've organized this. And the training that I did with them, you know, I put together a nice slideshow. It was basically an intro to basically to rescue or not to rescue. I went over the decision-making process, assessing the risks, deciding whether or not you want to be that guy or that woman that risks everything you have to save complete strangers. And there are several phases through this training. Yeah, we're going to have Earth Day. I like that, Warland. Today on Earth Day, April 20, we'll have our counter to Earth Day. It'll be Earth Day. And, you know, I like Earth, Earth, Earth. I didn't come up with it. I'm not a big fan of it, but, you know, I would have liked something a little more manly, like the Committee of Vigilance or something like that, or, you know, but that's okay. You know, Earth's going to be harmless. When we put our little cans out in the grocery store or the gas stations, help donate to Earth so we can buy emergency blankets. You're like, oh, Earth, that sounds so nice. You know, we'll get it. Our what is it? Our mascot can be a dog. Earth, Earth, Earth. Get Snoopy. Huh?
It's been called Tactical Urban Response Detachment.
Yeah, we wanted Lou. Here's what Lou wanted: Tactical Urban Response Detachment. And we put that up on the board, and everybody saw it. It's spelled turd. And but that's the kind of sense of humor that Lou has. And actually, I thought that was very funny.
Yeah.
Hi, we're with Turd. We're here to help you. We'll have our little brown vests. You know, you're supposed to have like orange or green vests for the you know, you stand out, your little helmet, you know, your protective gear on and everything. And you're there to help. You're there to get debris, and you're like, oh, good, Turd's here. So, yeah, that one was voted down almost immediately. Yeah, Turd Man. But, yeah, Earth is innocuous, and you guys need to be thinking about that. We're at war. We're at war with the powers of evil, whether you want to believe it's our own government or not. I'm not going to beat you up with that. But what you call yourself may get you passed over in the first roundups. You get out there and you say, you know, death to the Democrat Party Rangers. Guess whose door they're going to be knocking on first? Get right, you know. And I'm not saying hide or lie about what you're doing, but I'm saying sometimes it's okay to camouflage your vehicle. Minuteman saying, for firefighting equipment, also check with the United States Forest Service. They have a really good reuse program where they try and get stuff back into the communities. We actually are bidding on one. When I say bidding, it's not for money. It's on, hey, we need one and we're going to do this. The pastors sent out letters and pictures and telling them what we're doing here and showing them the urban interface terrain and how a fire truck would be really good here. And training, I have enough experience that I could train people how to use a hose line or a water cannon on a small brush truck. You know, there's some basic skills. Most of it's safety. 80% of firefighting is safety, and then 20% is fire science. You know, you follow the safety rules, you maintain, you know, defensible space and all those kind of things, you're fine. But, you know, and then when the fire actually takes over, knowing how to use the nozzle properly, maintaining, you know, a scout that keeps a 360 visual on where the fire is, especially, see, because we're talking urban interface here, next to the wildland or forest fire. People get overrun in flames and stuff. It's happened to us. I've been overrun twice and had to run and jump in lakes. Once in a river, once in a lake. Actually, that's not true. Once in a lake, once in a swimming pool. I had to jump in a swimming pool one time because I got overrun because I was out by myself on the end of a hose line trying to defend a guy's house, and the wind shifted, and next thing you know, here comes a wall of fire up the hill at me. And it's not that hard to teach civilians how to maintain, you know, man a fire hose. Excuse me, people a fire hose. I'm going to be politically correct, right? Just kidding. To train men and women how to use a fire hose is not that hard. Knowing what setting to set the nozzle on for different types of fire, that type of thing. And so we could get into that. It's funny because when we first had the CERT program, I could take people out and I could set fire. We could build these fires in these metal tins, big like troughs, and we'd put chemical liquids in there and set fires. Then we'd teach the civilians how to use the fire hose for different types of fire, chemical fire, wood fire, you know, and we'd do all kinds of stuff. Well, then we got turned into the CARB, Air Resources Resource Board, for setting unnecessary fires on a fire training facility. So then we had to put up different colored cones. Oh, the green cone is this. You know, we had to paint cones. The orange cone is wood fire. The red cone is a chemical fire. And then we had to knock the cones over. My wildfire captain may come up for a weekend to train you. Oh, that would be cool. Thanks, Minuteman. That would be great. We've also got Magic, who's a fire captain out of Utah. I don't want to use his real name, but we have a guy who's volunteered to do that, too. You can never get enough training, folks. And networking like this, like Minuteman right there in the chat room, saying, hey, you know, we can get somebody up there. This is why lone wolfing it is a bad, bad idea. Why it's a bad idea. The training that we're getting here is not because we're isolated, not because we refuse to do this radio show, not because we're worried that they may, you know, go, oh, look, they've got this guy up there in Korea. He's doing a radio show every day on militia, preparedness, history. We, you know. No, the reason I do this show, because the risks outweigh the benefits. People come in, they have skill sets, they share them. I can tell you one thing, I'm glad that the Lord led me here, because I have, the only thing I really do good is talk and eat. And the fact that, you know, and talking also encompasses teaching to a certain degree. I'm not a great teacher, but I get a lot of information. And I can share that with the church. And I think I blew some people away yesterday, because I don't think they were ready for that level of training in a church. Some of the people who hadn't been here for a while. And they sat down, and I'm talking about, you know, the Kurds getting gassed and what the signs of, you know, nerve agents are, and, you know, how to identify, you know, secondary devices in a disaster situation. You know, I'm going through all, and I've got a, you know, because of Lou and me scouring the internet, we've got some great pictures and the slideshow presentation, you know, this PowerPoint on Open Office. I was using Open Office because we don't have Microsoft stuff on our computers, but
it takes too long.
But yeah, it takes too long to install and all that. So Lou just got Open Office for us. Again, another reason to thank him. If it wasn't for him, you know, I wouldn't even be using Open Office. But we were able to do this, and I'm showing people, you know, in the three safety things: uphill, upwind, and away. 1,500 feet away minimum from a hazmat, uphill, upwind. you know, overhead dangers. And I'm going into this, and they're like, and I only did an hour. And I said, this is a two-day course. It's actually a three-day course. The CERT program is 3 hours on Friday, 8 hours on Saturday, and 8 hours on Sunday. Is the standard course. And I would go into a church and they would suspend their Sunday service. You know, we'd have like a little abbreviated one over lunch. And I've been in Mormon churches, excuse me, Latter-day Saint, I don't know what they like to be called, but I've been in Mormon churches, Presbyterian churches, Catholic churches, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people I've trained as a community emergency response trainer. And here's something I found out today. I called FEMA this morning. Yeah, that's right. I actually called back to Maryland. And I said, hi, my name's Joe Schmo, and I was an instructor from 92 to 2004. And I need to know if my certification is still good. And the reason I ask that is because there are benefits to this. You can get training materials. You can get, I knew one, there's a CERT group up in the northeast, like Maine, New Hampshire area. Latter-day Saints, that's what they like to be called, somebody said. Up in the northeast, that got like trailer loads of triage equipment. You know, not immediate care, but secondary care. You triage people and you move them on. Portable hospitals, water purifying units for mass care. They got all kinds of mass care stuff because they organized well. They put in for grants. So you get a little bit of name recognition and validity to your group. You may be able to get some of that back from, you know, the tax money they stole from you. Now, there's an ethical problem there. Some people go, I don't want to benefit from the federal government. I don't want them knowing what we're doing. But if you keep a nice thick wall between your militia and your IRF group, what a great way to do it. So they said, yeah, you can continue to study. And if the only bad thing is if you want a certificate, I'm not one for certificates, you have to give them your Social Security number. If I do a class for you, if I do the two-day, two-hour, three-hour class, and you want a certificate, you have to submit a Social Security number to them for them to, and you know why they want it. They want to know who you are and where you are. But I said, what if I just want to teach the classes and, you know, and just get it to go fine? If you don't want to issue certificates, then don't worry about it. Yeah, I did forget to call back. We were locating a male subject that had to be served some papers today, Minuteman. I'm sorry. And then I took a nap. So I will call you back after the show, Minuteman, on the cell phone. I will call you back immediately following the show to get that intel. I really want to make sure I get that. And I have to share something else with you about the subject we've been talking about the individual. I got even more that puts it more into the confirmed. ERF Rangers, hey, that's not too bad. Yeah, we were thinking about that. The Emergency Response Family Rangers, Pioneers. The word pioneer. Do you know what the word pioneer used to be, guys? That's what Orland just put in there. I'll give him credit for that, Rangers. Pioneers were parts of, you know, that would go out and gather food. They would hunt the terrain, scout the terrain for people. Scouts. ERF scouts. Think about that. You say, hey, tonight at the church at Kauai, we're having an ERF scout meeting. It's the second Tuesday of every month where we discuss emergency preparedness and earthquake response, and we teach first aid classes, you know, and all that. What a great face that can put on this movement. Plus, you can use it for recruiting, right? You know, up here we're going to have a little bit of a hard time convincing the locals because this church has been here since 1964 and been doing this. So they're going to know anything we do is still going to be militia. But countywide? And let's say our sheriff, who just got elected to another term and told us that he agrees with everything we're doing on under the table, he just can't do it above ground. And we go to him and say, you know what, sheriff, we got this thing going. We need a government grant. We need a county grant. We want to get a fire truck. We need some new hose. We need to put a little building for it up here on the North Fork so we can help take care of stuff up here. I think you could send us $10,000 for a seed grant. And we'll buy a Quonset hut and throw it up. Gonna go a long way. If he's calling you the, you know, emergency response family scout group from Kauai, when he goes to take it to his higher ups, right? It's gonna look good on paperwork. I mean, I train militias all over Southern California, and none of them call themselves militias. And I guarantee you, 80% of the classes that I taught, you know, when I'd get done on the Sunday afternoon, and I'm thanking everyone and, you know, making sure I get all their information so they get their nice little, you know, FEMA certificate. I go, are there any questions on anything we covered? I guarantee you the first or third, within the first three questions is this: what kind of guns do you recommend we should have? How much ammo should we have? And I would say, and it was funny because I had this nice little FEMA uniform. It was actually the Governor's Office of Emergency Services uniform that I had. It looked like a regular fire uniform with a baseball cap with a symbol on it. I'd take off my hat, I'd take my badge off. I always wore my badge on my belt. It looked cooler that way, and I could hide it under my fat if I didn't want anybody to see it. So I'd take my badge off, and I'd sit it on the table. I said, please ask that question again now that we've adjourned the meeting. And everybody would laugh and chuckle, and I'd go, I've taken off my official government stooge hat, and I've taken off my FEMA badge / state badge, you know, Office of Emergency Services badge. Ask that question again, and then we'd spend 2 to 3 hours discussing that stuff, and I got to know people, and it was great, and it actually surprised me, because I didn't think California had people like that back in 92, 93, 94. I came from that in Colorado, but I didn't think that California did. So this is a great way to do this, folks, and I'm encouraging you. All you have to do is Google CERT training. CERT training. It's all right there, folks. And if you're alone, still do it, because they have independent study courses you can do online. You can do it online. If you want to give them your Social Security number, they'll send you certificates. And it's all free. Now, if you want to go back to Maryland or Los Angeles, actually, I think it's San Diego. They're doing the training now. Maybe Minuteman knows. I got trained in San Diego and a place in Maryland. But I was working for a fire department, but they still send train the trainers back. You know, that kind of stuff. I took exercise training classes. I mean, I could probably get a disaster preparedness degree if I were to scrounge up all my credits. But if you're not seeking a certificate or a degree, you can do it all for free. You don't have to pay any fees. You don't have to give them your Social Security number. Knowledge is what's important here, right? Now, you're all Googling it right now. I've got to say, it's saved on that. If you go to bookmarks, recently added bookmarks, you can cut and paste it in there. This is like Emergency Management Institute or something on there, Lou. You can post those in the room, and people will be able to get it. We're coming to the end of our first hour where we talked about training. Second hour, I'm going to talk about pastors of the American Revolution. I'm going to go into specifics. People have asked me to do this. This has been the most requested subject. Next to, you know, what kind of battle rifle should I have? And we've done that more than enough for a few weeks. But I'm going to give you some different pastors from the American Revolution. Thank you, Lou. CitizensCorps.gov. CitizensCorps.gov. And I know Obama's got his fingers all over this, but that doesn't mean you have to give him your real name or anything. And if you don't want him to send stuff to your home, just download it at the library. Bring a data chip with you and download the manuals. The manuals are big, costly to print up, but if you get enough people to share the cost. But if you want the manuals for free and stuff, you know, you can have them sent to a post office box. Don't let fear keep you from getting this knowledge base. Don't let fear keep you from giving your neighbors the power to survive. Okay, folks, we're going to be back after the break. I'm Dutch Jones, Liberty Tree Radio. We're going to jump over to them next, and keep listening.
The battle cry of freedom. Beneath it oft we've conquered and will conquer oft again. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. Our deep sea forever, she's never at a loss. Down with the eagle and up with the cross. We will rally around, the bonnie flag will rally once again. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. Our gallant boys have marched to the rolling of the drums. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. And the leaders in charge cry out, come, boys, come. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. Our Dixie forever, she's never at a loss. Down with the eagle and up with the cross. We will rally around, the bonnie flag will rally once again. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. They have laid down their lives on the bloody battlefield. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. Their motto is resistance to the tyrants never yield. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. Our Dixie Shout, shout the battle cry of freedom.
Deny that Christ is the head of the church, and what human power has the impious presumption to invade his kingdom, usurp his authority, lay sacrilegious hands upon his crown rights, and with a state constitution flaunted in his face, proclaim the right of the state to challenge his ambassadors and put them under civil disability, nay, more, to assert the right to say to his messengers of life and salvation, you are commissioned by your head and Lord to go preach the gospel to every creature, but you must first come and comply with the conditions prescribed by the state and obtain from some blasphemous, drunken, Christ-despising, heaven-defying civil magistrate the authority to teach and preach in the name of Jesus. To the superficial thinker, this may seem to be putting the case too strongly, but it is only the inevitable logic of facts. The state cannot confer the right to preach the gospel, therefore it cannot take it away. Christ is the head of the church, God over all, and blessed forevermore. All power is given unto him in heaven and earth, and he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet. Amen? Amen. Thank you.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point bulletins. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention!
Is an emergency.
Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
I can really hear that. I don't know if the listeners heard that, but that sounded kind of funny. Fried chicken, and to mention food, I'm starving. We haven't eaten since 11, and he's talking about food. Well, I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Thank you, Lewis, for getting us on the air. Thanks, Ed, the AK-47. We appreciate you carrying us on Liberty Tree Radio, and welcome to all our Liberty Tree Radio listeners. I'm going to adjust the mic here. This is not a guest host. My voice is just raspy from having a summer cold. It's going around here. We want to welcome you folks for tuning in, the folks carrying over from Facebook, MySpace, the folks that are on UBroadcast. Thanks for sticking it out. The first hour, in case you missed it, we were talking about the training we had this weekend. We did an entire day of fire starting, survival training, you know, what to do if lost, how to use a compass and a map, very introductory, how to set your pace, how to measure your pace, and just introduction. And we're going to incorporate these again in a massive training in the next 2 or 3 months, where we work it all together. We'll have competition to see who can start the fire the fastest, see if people actually listened and paid attention. And then we talked about our modification of the community emergency response training manuals to fit our need. And then lastly, we talked about maybe the benefits of not calling yourself, hey, the Rough Rider Militia. We're the Emergency Response Rangers, and we're here to help in disasters. Talked a little bit about maybe couching your group's name a little different. What was it? The Tactical Urban Response Detachment is what Lee wanted. TURD, T-U-R-D. But that was voted down in the first round here for our group, although Lou's still pushing for it. He's had T-shirts made. He had Frisbees. I think he even had some oven mitts and hats made with that T-U-R-D on it. See? That's what's called counting your chickens before they hatch. You know, throwing up that name.
Special sunglasses.
Yeah, special sunglasses that said turd on them. Yeah, on the side. Lou's all about marketing, aren't you, Lou? Good for you, Lynn. Good for you, Ties. Okay. So this next subject that we're going to talk about is the most requested subject that I get. I get it from my regular listeners. I get it from the Facebook folks. I get it from the Liberty Tree Radio folks, the listeners, not the hosts, that are saying, hey, we like your show. Have you ever thought about doing just a whole show on this? And I decided, I give the people what they want. You know, that's always a good thing to do. Sometimes you give them what they need, as much as you can, the type of topics. And then I gotta kind of couch it in a way that I'm not overlapping what better men than I are teaching, on the radio here. But I put together some stuff. I squeezed the brains of our pastor. Oh, and that's another thing. We're going to bring the pastor, Warren Mark Campbell, in, and we're gonna do probably a whole 2 hours in the next few weeks on the whole preterist view. Premillennialism, it's always hard for me to say that, versus postmillennialism, end time stuff. Just to clarify it a little bit, because it's a much maligned perspective that only a few Christians in America have, where we don't sit around worrying about the rapture and all that. We do believe in the rapture, but we're not going to sit on our hands and do nothing. And it has to do with the destruction of Jerusalem, which is a hot topic, in 70 AD, and I can't do it. I am a student. I'm a disciple of that concept. I'm a partial preterist. We're not full preterists here. And that's P-R-E-T-E-R-I-S-T, if you want to Google it. So that's something coming up in the next few weeks. And we're going to have Warren Mark Campbell on, because I can't do it justice. But that's like the second or third most requested subject. People, what about Israel? What's the deal with Israel? Why don't you talk about Israel in the Bible? And it's just not my... I don't want to say something stupid, say something wrong. I'm not worried about offending Israel. I'm not worried about offending the Jews. We don't live in fear of Zog. But I want to make sure that you guys get solid. Our pastor's been doing this for 30 years now. We had Pastor Pike on. We had the Liberty Tree guy, Liberty Ship guys on. We want to do it justice. We want to talk about the real judgment of Israel that occurred in 70 AD and what era we live in now. And so that's something to look forward to. I know people really enjoy hearing Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, and we need to get more of his sound bites up. We need to get some of his sage words of advice. As I always say, we stand on the shoulders of great men and women here. We watched again over the weekend Johnny Tremaine, probably one of the few Disney films that I really enjoy, other than like The Alamo or something, the Davy Crockett series. But Johnny Tremaine, talking about the Sons of Liberty, that kind of stuff. So we like to do what we can and bring that kind of stuff to you. Our history is everything. The negative side is people who ignore history are condemned to repeat it. But I always like to say people who forget history are separating themselves from a huge resource of knowledge and a flow, a river full, a raging river of idea and thought that is necessary to live free in the future and to make sure that our children, which is more important than me living free, my children living free, and the unknown offspring of my children. That's why I'm in this. That's why I do this. So I reach into the past to fling it forward so that they won't forget. So the number one thing that people ask me about is, why don't you talk about pastors of the American Revolution? There's such a and there's just so many. I could go on. I could do a whole show on nothing but Jonas Clark. Every day I could take something from his journals, something from his sermons, and just talk about Jonas Clark. And if you don't know who Jonas Clark is, you need to Google it, because he was the pastor on the green, the shot heard around the world. And he was the man who trained his militia to fight and stand up against the British when they came to take the powder and the shot and the rifles and the weapons from the subjects, from the British subjects at the time. So Jonas Clark. You got to Google him. There's five or six books in this library about him and his family and what he did, and how just that little microcosm of thought in his small church, 140, 160 men, that changed the world that day. So you got to realize that America didn't start just in 1776. There were settlements here from all nations. We know that. It's not just British. We had the French, Spanish, the Spanish were everywhere. Florida. There were Huguenots that came here from France. There were all kinds of people that came to the North American continent. Scottish, everybody came here. And they brought with them all different types of religious thought. You had a few Catholics, but mostly Protestants. People fleeing persecution by tyrants. You had Puritans who... I wouldn't be a Puritan today if it was the predominant religion, I have to tell you that. But they played key roles. You've got guys like William Penn, Nathaniel Ward, John Harvard, people that we're going to talk about here in the next hour, and hopefully I'll be able to get to all of them. If not, we'll extend it till tomorrow. Because it's important that you learn about these great men in history and what they did to form the ideals. Because, you know, man created the revolution, but the church is, you know, created in the men these ideals. Put in these, you know, God created men, the churches educated them. And if it wasn't for the churches in America, the little parishes to the great institutions like Harvard and stuff, they wouldn't have had the concept of liberty. So if it weren't for the men of God in this nation, I don't think we would have ever broken off from the revolution. Now, I can't debate theologians on this or historians, but that's what I believe. So if you start, you know, in the 1600s, that's really when it really, you know, the Europeans really started coming over here. We all know about, you know, Jamestown and all that kind of stuff, the failed attempts to colonize. But in 1619, in Virginia, the first assembly, there were clergymen in that first assembly in Virginia. They weren't barred from serving like they are today. And I don't say barred by law like they are today, because there's no law today saying a clergyman can't serve, but they just won't vote for clergy today. And honestly, the caliber of men that run that are clergy are probably not worth voting for. They'll ignore Chuck Baldwin, who's a pastor, but, you know, they'll go out. What's the guy from Missouri? What was his name? The little short dude? I forgot his name. Hutchinson. What was his name? I can't remember his name now. Anyway, he's got a show on Fox now. You guys in the chat room will tell me who he is. So 1619, the first assembly, the General Assembly of Governance of Virginia, had clergy in it. 1620, John Robinson, who was a pastor, he's the one that helped shape the Mayflower Compact. And we're going to go into more detail on these people. Roger Williams and John Clark founded the state of Rhode Island. Rhode Island was a Christian state from its founding. Thomas Hooker and John Davenport in 1639 founded the state of Connecticut and had a hand in writing the first Constitution. 1639. The first Constitution that was written on this soil for Connecticut was written with pastors. 1638, here's a name you should know. John Harvard founded the first university in North America. 1638, a Christian college, Harvard. Look at it today. John Harvard, a pastor. They created preachers and missionaries. In 1641, Nathaniel Ward was involved in the writing of the Massachusetts Body of Liberty. 1641. Some of the first documents written were written by Christian pastors on liberty. 1681, you know this name, William Penn, founded Pennsylvania, which means Penn's Woods, from a land grant he got, and writing its frame of government. That was 1681, William Penn. Long before 1775, when the shots heard around the world rang out. Now, in the 1700s, you have John Wise, father of American independence. Now, in 1717, John Wise, who has been called the father of American independence, wrote this book, and I'm going to say this slow because you guys need to read this book, The Law of Nature and Government. Now, it's not today, it's not the Green Party, nature. Nature back then meant God's law. Natural law was God's law. The nature of, you know, the law of nature and government, which contained such important ideas that it was reprinted and studied by our founders in 1772 and cited as legal authority by the Massachusetts Supreme Court. Sections of this work appear word for word in the Declaration of Independence. That's John Wise. There's a pastor right there. Now, Elisha Williams was the first recorded militant clergyman. Now, I don't doubt that there were other pastors whose sermons weren't written or recorded, and people didn't write about them were in little parish churches that were preaching militant doctrine, because it's a hardcore, basic biblical belief that didn't just appear in 1700. Elisha Williams was a significant force during the First Great Awakening. He served as a school teacher, a state representative, president of Yale University, another Christian college that's gone astray. As a school teacher, a state representative, president of Yale University, a judge, and an ambassador. This is a preacher. He was a disciple of George Whitefield and became chaplain of the New England forces in the French and Indian War. Whitefield blessed the troops as they marched off to battle, and Williams even became a colonel who led troops a year later in 1746. It's still under British rule, but he was still serving in the military. Now, Elisha Williams wrote a 66-page pamphlet in 1744, which should be studied by every American Christian and militia member sometime in their lifetime, called The Essential Rights and Liberties of Protestants. I'm going to say that again. The Essential Rights and Liberties of Protestants, and that's written by Elisha Williams, and it should be another book that you guys study. It was one of the clearest and and fullest explanations of the principles of equality, liberty, and property. These ideas were influential in preparing people for the revolution a few decades later. I don't know how many were Masons, but if you've listened to the show, you know I don't get hung up on the Masons thing. That'd be like saying today how many of them belong to the JCs or the Eagles Club. God uses people to do his bidding good, and I'm not going to get caught up on how many of them are Masons. But I don't know how many of them were Masons. And quite frankly, I don't care. Samuel Davies, ambassador. I got a comment in the chat room. We don't get hung up on the Masonic thing. George Washington was a Mason. Okay. He's still a great man. Samuel Davies, ambassador from the South. Reverend Samuel Davies was a bold ambassador for Christ in his desire to see the kingdom of God come on earth as it is in heaven. He also became a lawyer, an ambassador to England, and president of Princeton, another Christian college, Princeton. Now, E.L. Magoon writes that he had made himself a thorough master of English law, civil and ecclesiastical is church, and always chose to meet every persecuting indictment in the highest courts with his own plea. He went to England and obtained an explicit sanction of the highest authority with respect to the extensions of the totalitarian law of Virginia. It was during this mission that George II and many of his court were in the congregation of this preacher. When His Majesty spoke several times to those around him, Davies paused a moment and then, looking sternly at the king, exclaimed, "When the lion roars, the beasts of the forest all tremble. And when King Jesus speaks, the princes of the earth should keep silent." I love that. He mocked King George II when he'd start talking in the pews. "When King Jesus speaks, the princes of the earth should keep silent." The boldness, eloquence, and ideas of Davies had a great impact upon the life of his neighbors in Virginia, specifically Patrick Henry. A lot of things that this pastor, Samuel Davies, Patrick Henry, we all know what he did. Jonathan Mayhew, they consider him the father of civil liberty. Not the ACLU, but the father of civil liberties. Reverend Jonathan Mayhew has been called the father of civil liberties in America for several reasons. He was the first clergyman to begin preaching resistance in England's tyranny in 1750. In his discourse concerning unlimited submission, which is another biblical doctrine, he said, "Although there be sense in which Christ's kingdom is not of this world, his inspired apostles have, nevertheless, laid down some great general principles concerning the office of civil rulers and the duty of subjects. It is the duty of all Christian peoples to inform themselves what it is which their religion teaches concerning the subjugation which they owe to the higher powers." After the passage of the Stamp Act, Mayhew became even more influential. So these pastors under English rule at the time, you remember we weren't America till the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and all that, till the struggle. And I've got stuff in here on Otis, which we talked about earlier too, Lou. These preachers were preaching resistance when everybody else was cowering and just paying their taxes. "Whoever repeats the story of the Revolution will rehearse the fame of Mayhew. He spent whole nights in prayer for the dangers of this country. Light dawned on his mind on a Sabbath morning in July 1766 when he wrote to James Otis being one of the founding fathers, 'You have heard of the communion, i.e. the unity of the churches. While I was thinking of this, the importance of the communion of the colonies appeared to me in a striking light. Would it not be..." Okay, you know, I always love it when I get these words that I pre-read and I don't go back and look them up. "Would it not be decorous in our assembly to send circulars to all the rest of the colonies expressing a desire to cement a union among ourselves? It may be the only means of perpetuating our liberties. This suggestion," said Bancroft, "of a more perfect union for the common defense originating with Mayhew was the first public expression of the future union which has been the glory of the American Republic, and it came from a clergyman on a Sabbath morning under the inspiration of heaven." You had preachers saying, "We need to unite against tyranny." Just like the churches in the colonies, they didn't call it the Americas, just like the churches here in the Americas, in the colonies, you know, are unified in our struggle for the King Jesus' kingdom. We pastors need to make sure that the states see this and use it as an example. Now, Reverend John Witherspoon, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, If you don't know who he is, or at least recognize the name, you need to study more. You need to study a lot more. Reverend John Witherspoon typified the colonial clergy who literally discipled the nation. Witherspoon served as a minister, as president of Princeton, as a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and on over 100 committees in Congress during our struggle for independence. He is said to have had more influence on the monetary policies founded in the Constitution than any other single man. While president of Princeton, he trained not only ministers, but leaders in all areas of life. One man came to study theology, but biblical principles of law and government were so impressed upon him that he went on to become chief architect of the Constitution and the fourth president of the United States. That was James Madison. Witherspoon trained these men. Witherspoon's training enabled him to accomplish this. Witherspoon also trained one vice president, 3 Supreme Court justices, 10 cabinet members, 12 governors, 60 congressmen, 21 being senators, 39 being congressmen, plus many members of the Constitutional Convention and many state congressmen. The following is a little bit from his sermon entitled The Dominion of Providence Over the Affairs of Men, what Witherspoon preached on May 17th, 1776, in observance of a day of fasting and prayer called for by the Congress. Now you got to realize, May 17th, 1776, he's given this sermon. So May, June, July 4th, the Declaration of Independence. These pastors were in the heat of it. They were not shutting their doors and shuttering their windows and saying, oh, that's of them, this is of us. Let's not get involved in politics like we see today. It is the rare occasion that somebody stands up and calls Obongo what he is from the pulpit. Back then, they pointed their fingers at King George, at the occupational forces, from the pulpit. What went wrong? Careers have been built on deciding what went wrong, but I'm telling you, this is the true history. This is what John Witherspoon had to say from the pulpit on May 17th, 1776. The dominion of providence over the affairs of men. Upon the whole, I beseech you to make a wise improvement upon the present threatening aspect of public affairs, and to remember that your duty is to God, to your country, and to your families, and to yourself is the same. True religion is nothing else but an inward temper and outward conduct suited to your state, I like that, to your state, and circumstance and providence at any time. As a peace with God and conformity to Him adds to the sweetness of created comforts while we possess them, so in times of difficulty and trial it is in the man of piety and inward principle that we may expect to find the uncorrupted patriot, the useful citizen, and the invincible soldier. God grant that in America true religion and civil liberty may be inseparable, and the unjust attempts to destroy the one may in this issue tend to support the establishment of both. If they come after the churches, let the men fight for liberty. If they come after liberty, let the churches fight to defend liberty. Witherspoon. I can think of only 5 pastors right now off the top of my head that preach this same doctrine today. And yes, I know the firing squads are not here, the gallows are not here. They don't need to be. We don't need the boot on our neck for it to be tyranny. But what we do need are the churches to start preaching this type of doctrine. The reason that they don't need to use firing squads is because people willingly enter into slavery because the churches stopped teaching this. Now I've got like 4 minutes, and I got so many of these people that I got line after line after line. But if your church isn't teaching this kind of stuff, you need to approach your pastors. Say, why aren't you talking about what's going on in the political venue here? Why aren't you talking about how the state has taken over the welfare and well-being of its people? Why aren't you what's with the nanny state? It's in the Bible that speaks against it. Why aren't you preaching this? Why aren't you teaching us self-sufficiency? Why aren't you teaching us to be diligent? Why aren't you teaching us to run for local office? Now, depending on how the political setup of your church is, they may just do whatever you tell them to do. I don't know. I've seen that happen. But if they balk at it, or your deacons, or whatever you want to call them, are afraid to do it, you need to find another church. If you can get the mass of people who do it, Okay, cool. Thanks, Stacy. If you can get the mass of the people behind you in the church, especially if you have a small church, maybe you can change that pastor. If you can't change his attitude, change the pastor. If he refuses to teach, show him these same doctrines. You know, hey, these pastors were preaching it, why aren't you? And if your church is a 501c3, that's a whole other battle. You got to educate them in. So and I'm going to say this, a lot of people don't like this because it's not good for one Christian to bash another church. It's actually against it. But if your church won't teach these things, refuses to acknowledge those facts, you need to start your own church in your house. You don't need a guy in a black robe sitting up on a pedestal. Get the Bible out. Get these supporting doctrines. Get these historical documents. Start with your family first and expand out to your neighbors, coworkers, friends, survival buddies. That's okay, Stacy. I don't care if you spell bad. You have a responsibility to make sure that you are tapping into the right stream of thought here. You're accountable. You know, they always say ignorance of the law is no excuse. Ignorance of biblical doctrines in the history of America is no excuse. When we have the ability still to move freely and access these facts, when there are people out there putting out books like America's Providential History, when you can go and find the original writings still unfettered, you got to dig at your local library, but when you can find the journals of the founding fathers and take the time to read them, you're denying the liberty of your children. Your cowardice and laziness is a yoke that you may willingly bear, but how dare you pass that on to your children and to the unknown children of them? I mean, how dare you? You are a coward of the worst kind. You've been informed. You've been duly informed, if you listen to this show, that you need to study this stuff. Ignorance only gets you so far. I'm sure there's a few people that, you know, don't go to church, don't do it. They go to work every day, they come home, they're barely making it. There may be some recompense for them, some excuse, but the fact of it is, I don't know anyone that doesn't have cable, that doesn't watch the History Channel and get at least a little bit of a hint. Even that diluted preaching that they do out there on the History Channel and all that, they at least touch on some nuggets of truth with their twisting of history. What kind of... Oh, boy, that came up fast. Well, we're going to be back after the break, and this is a Monday where we discuss spiritualism and the cause. It is a holy cause of liberty, and we'll be back after the break to discuss a little bit more of it. I got to give out the phone number now. I keep forgetting to give out the phone number, and people don't call, and I get mad at them.
They're
don't have the phone
calling
number.
Us right-wing extremists, and they mock us on TV. 'Cause we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing Americans who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. Up till now, I always thought our vets were real patriots who loved our country with all their hearts. Oh, they proudly wore the uniform. They fought and died on foreign shores when liberty called them to do their part. Now the Department of Homeland Security has sounded the alarm, calling our vets a bigger threat than the terrorists who want to do us harm. They're calling us right-wing extremists, and they mock us on TV, 'cause we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing conservatives who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. We tend to be pro-life all the way. We're not ashamed to bow our heads to pray. The First Amendment gives us the right to speak our minds. We don't like how our money's spent by politicians who seem bent on controlling everything in our lives. They're even calling us rednecks and racists because we don't like the policies of our nation's first black president in our great history. They're calling us right-wing extremists and they mock us on TV because we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing daughters and sons who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemies number one. Through our faith in God, who we still trust, America was born, but freedom lost is forever gone. Our founding fathers warned. Oh, they're calling us right-wing extremists and they mock us on TV, 'cause we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing patriots who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. Yes, now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. Yes, now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Without a gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
New world order.
Attention.
The government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going
to
call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old onion soup powder, man, just put out that little bit of all that. You don't need no grilled onions, man.
Oh, man, yes. That onion soup powder, Lou, that is like a recipe for success right there. Make sure you throw that Lipton's onion cup of soup stuff in all your gear, and you will not go wrong. It will actually make squirrel roadkill. I don't care what you're eating. You throw a little bit of that powdered onion soup mix in there. Who needs grilled onions? Who was that again?
Boomhauer.
That was Boomhauer again? Well, thank you, Lou, for bringing in Boomhauer. I loved King of the Hill. I heard it got canceled. I don't know. I don't have TV. Over the break, we were talking about, you know, how TV kills your brain, you know, because I brought up History Channel. Yeah, it does. If you don't watch it with the proper filters. It's like welding. Sure, if you weld without your mask on, you're going to go blind. But if you watch TV with the proper filters on, I blame America, the public broadcasting system. I almost said American broadcasting system, not ABC. PBS. It destroyed our children's attention span. It program them towards the cult of multiculturalism instead of being proud in our diversity. People don't like it when I say that, but you know what I mean. PBS destroyed the way they couched history on PBS, and I just the TV was a powerful realm that the Christians just didn't take part in. Another example of weak Christianity in America causing more damage than anything else, than even what the enemy's doing. Christians said, "Oh, we can't get involved in TV; it's evil." What if Christians had gotten involved in TV when it first came out? And there were major Christian broadcasting networks. I'm not talking about these pay-for-play guys that get up and tell you to send your money, so they send you a sweat rag. But just good 24 hours a day programming that instills historical relevance and Christian relevance in its programming. Wouldn't it have been great? Instead of allowing the Jews to take over television? Yep, I said that. That's right. Ooh, that went out. I worked in television. I worked in film very briefly. I was naive. I came to Hollywood thinking I could have an impact. And I ended up going, this stinks. And only tried for a year. But at least I practiced what I preach. I did try. But it's too far gone now. That's why we take the alternate media. That's why we're doing stuff on the web. And they're trying to get rid of that. They're trying, you know, they want to pass laws so that we can't even do these types of radio shows. You know, they come after you with copyright violations. But all the music I use on here, I have permission to use, with some exceptions. I mean, we'll throw a Clash song at you or a Social Distortion song at you once in a while, just because the message fits what we're talking about. But most of the stuff I have the explicit permission to use. We do have an ASCAP BMI license. That may surprise some of you. We have an ASCAP BMI license here at the church for our low-power FM. We believe, and that's a biblical doctrine, the people who write the music have a right to be paid for their stuff. So we pay a fee every year. I mean, so, you know, if we're using it, it goes out. So I guess pretty much everything we use is paid for through a general licensing fee. But we, you know, that's what we're doing here. And the whole purpose of this show is to try and get the churches to wake up, because we know that without, in the hearts of men and women, if they don't have a revival in their hearts, it's not going to make a difference. And if the churches don't wake up, it's not going to make a difference. A watchman watches in vain if it's not built on the Lord. But one of the key principles that I thought about this weekend when we were doing our training and everything, and I'm going to leave you with this the last 20 minutes or so of the show. I guess I got about 20 minutes left. Two things. If you, I didn't give out the phone number because there's no reason to call in. You know, I'm just gonna go with my monologue here. But if you want to contribute to the show, you can do so by sending emails to DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. Remember, Jones is spelled Jones. I think I've got that through your heads enough now. Also, if you want to contribute, there is a PayPal on DutchJones.tk tab. It's a pitch-in. Go straight to PayPal. So if you go to DutchJones.tk, DutchJones.tk. Remember, TK stands for Ted Kennedy. You know, may he rest in flames. And you go there and you'll see everything you need. Our post office box is back up. Stacy got it squared away. We're getting mail there. Everything's okay now. So just send it to Post Office Box 31 DJ. DJ, the initials DJ. Don't put Dutch Jones on it. They'll get all confused and they'll send it to the FBI or something, but just put DJ on it. And the reason I'm whispering is I got a killer sore throat right now.
Still?
Yeah. And so, you know, you can contact us that way. You can give us financial support, send us your prayers, send us your ideas for shows, your topics. Continue to send me articles. That's what makes the first half hour, the 2 hours work. You guys send me articles and I give you my Christian militant worldview on it, and I may be wrong sometimes. We're not in the show about, oh, tomorrow the sky's going to fall. That doesn't mean it won't fall, but that's not what we do. We're about the day-to-day trudging, one foot in front of the other, uphill battle. doing things on a daily basis to make us better soldiers for Christ tomorrow, if he so calls us to stand in the gap for him. That's why we do the training we do. That's why we procure the items we do. That's why we reach out, like during this radio show. But like I said before, there's no gallows being built. There's no firing squads right now. They don't need them. Why do they need to line people up and shoot them to get their will when people willingly do it? The shackles that are put around people's feet, hands, and neck are legal. They use words. They use ideas. They control you through your pocketbook. And the problem is that when we have a rally call that goes out to this cause, we get all the Tea Party people, and people get mad at me for bailing on them or bagging on them. I'm not bagging on them. I just want to keep them at arm's length because their anger is based on their pocketbooks. And I've been doing this for too long. Not as long as some, longer than most, but not as long as some. Even as a kid, I look at the people who were involved in it in the 80s when I watched my father and my uncles doing stuff. It was mostly about taxes. That's Lewis's new hat. Somebody whittled that up for him. It's a nice, it looks like he'd be snowboarding in it, but hey, it's a nice little weather hat. Good. Good thing we don't have the camera on. Looks like a hippy dippy hat, but I like it. You know, if we ever have to do undercover hippy dippy work, we can wear it. But I hope you're getting my point about the Tea Party people, that as soon as that solution comes around, they're going to stop screaming. The greater cause of liberty is not about taxes. It's not about freedom of movement. It's not about them seizing your land. It's about 100% liberty that comes from the author, the Lord. I don't know. Oh, he is? Okay. There can be no compromise on that. So the Hegelian dialect is, okay, if we get lower taxes and a Republican in office, everything's okay. That's what happened, you know, when George Bush II got elected into office and where everybody left the ranks. It's good to vote for Christian men. I'm not knocking that. But are they living the Christian walk? Are they following the path of righteousness? Or are they just getting your vote, you know, by showing video of them praying and doing things? Are these Tea Party people wearing the goofy hats and the signs, are they going to come out into the streets when they're coming after your guns? Or was it just about taxes, about too much spending, about too much deficit spending? And these Tea Party people, one thing that I have to disagree with them on is they're pro-war. About 80% of them are pro these ungodly, unconstitutional wars. So I don't embrace them. I put a hand out to them. I throw them a chunk of meat here and there, hoping they chew on it and figure out what it is. But I'm not ready to embrace these people in the holy cause of liberty. So that's why I don't think the Lord's timing is ready for it. This upheaval in the protests and things, it's not the time. It's not now. But that doesn't mean it's not tomorrow. So we're not a Chicken Little thing here. I'm not saying the revolution is going to start in my lifetime. It may start in Lou's or his kids. That's why we do it. But we have to stay on the wall. And we have to make sure that the guy standing next to us or the woman on our left side, man on our right side, is not some moron who's just in it for his pocketbook. Someone's asking me, do you think God will punish the tax collectors? He will punish the unjust tax collectors, yes. Just like in the Bible, if you repent for skimming and taking your chunks of it out and, you know, getting your feedback, a just tax collector, there are just taxes. It's biblically just to do taxes, but yeah. Heads of the IRS, people who come up with these laws, no. He's not going to forgive them unless they repent. But that's not the revolution I'm fighting. You know, that's between them and their God. Well, the God. I shouldn't say their God. There is only one God. Sometimes I slip up and say things like that. But I'm glad I catch myself. We will not save this nation on single-issue patriotism. We will not save this nation simply on patriotism at all. The only way this nation will be saved is by God's hand. In fact, we're not going to save it at all. When he sees that we are returning it to his intentional framework and plan, the way the founding fathers wanted it. But I tell you guys this over and over again, and I know the hardcore patriots aren't going to like what I'm about to say. I don't think we can save this nation. But what we can save are our people. What's more important, the nation or the Christian people? Someone's saying they try to get your vote by meeting with Billy Graham and saying they're saved. That's right. That poll came out that, you know, something like 22% of people think Obama erroneously is a Muslim. Who cares? He's not a Christian. He's not acting like a Christian leader. You know, he can go meet with Billy Graham and people will buy it. He can go to they can have the pastor from Saddleback Christian Institute or whatever it was show up. And it doesn't matter what they say or do in the prelims, you know, the primaries or in the actual vote. As soon as they get in office, they're going to forget everything they told you. And I'm going to say something here that makes a lot of people mad. Everyone who voted for George Bush, too, George Bush Jr., who thought that they were getting a Christian and believed the lies, needs to repent for that. All you phony Republican conservatives who still hold on to that need to repent of that and let go of it. Righteous men will run for office, but you ignore them. Chuck Baldwin ran, and people ignored him. Now, does it mean he was a solution? I don't know, but he was a much better choice than all those other fools. It's going to happen again. All you people are going to flock to the ballot boxes. You're going to vote for people that tickle your ears, that tell you what you want to hear. And all you people out there that call yourselves Christian conservative Americans that support this war, you know nothing of the Bible. You know nothing of the Constitution. You know nothing of the attitudes of the Founding Fathers. I love it when people, like, I'll post something. I'll post something on Facebook and they'll go, oh no, that's wrong, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And I'll say, what are you basing that on? And they have such a shallow response, and then I'll start hitting them with documents, doctrines, Bible verses, and go, did you even read what I wrote? And then they come back a couple days later like, wow, I had no idea. And they thank me. I said, don't thank me, thank the Lord Jesus Christ for putting this knowledge stream out there that I'm able to tap into. It's not a matter of if it's going to happen, it's just a matter of when. You know, we had somebody come on, I think it was Thursday, that said the internet was going to crash on Friday. That doesn't discredit them so much. It just means that they're tapping into some intel that they don't, you know, and they may get it from a good place, and they may do it. Well, we've got to keep from doing that ourselves. We've got to look at everything with a critical eye. Everything with a critical eye and test it against biblical doctrine and history and see how they've done it in the past. That doesn't mean they're going to do it exactly the same way. They learn. The enemy learns. And they apply their strategy in new and expounding ways that may completely surprise us. But it goes back to what I'm telling you. It's how we react. It's how we react. Liberty from the Lord Jesus. Is everything okay? Is he here?
No.
Drove through and left. Liberty from the Lord Jesus Christ is the only reason to fight. Now, you can get angry about taxes, you can get angry about a nanny state, you can get angry about the CPS. Those are all reasons to speak out, and you should. But just because you win that battle doesn't mean that tyranny is dead. You know, a narrow focused view of tyranny doesn't do anything but get you happy, and then you go back into your hole. You have to have a generalist view of what's going on out there. I've abandoned the voting concept. And some people up here don't like that. There are people up here that still say you got to vote for good people and you got to do that. That's fine. I'll vote on local issues. But tell you what, I have no faith in the voting system. I have no faith in voting, no faith in the courts, no faith in the judiciary, no faith in the lawmakers. So why should I throw in with those that I know are going to pervert whatever it is they even say they're going to do, much less what I ask them to do? Isn't it better that I work on training core values in the people around me so that when that withers and dies on the vine, that they can take the seats? I'm not set for greatness. I know that. I am not worthy of leading anyone. I couldn't do any of the, you know, I'm a typical critic. I can point fingers at all these nasty people and say what they're doing, but I couldn't do the job that I'm asking them to do. But I can help others be molded in that way so that they go forth. I've often said that our children are arrows in our quiver. That's from Psalms. And we shoot them forward as weapons, and that's what it is. So if I can create better arrows than are worthy of my hand, then maybe there is hope. But I don't think there's hope for this nation, folks. And I know a lot of patriots hate hearing me say that. I know people in my very group go, oh, you've given up. There's a difference between giving up and being realistic and studying history and seeing how it goes. I know the Lord could come in and create a miracle, and suddenly tonight every congressman, every senator, every lobbyist could die in their sleep. A negative rapture. He could create a negative rapture and they all go to hell. I know God could do that. That's within God's power, right? Because everything is within God's power. And tomorrow we could hold real elections, and godly people could be elected. But I don't trust the majority of the people to even if God wipes the slate clean, I don't trust the people to put righteous men in, because people always vote in things that will make them fat and happy. They don't think about their children. They don't. Americans have stopped thinking about their children since about the 1960s when the hippie generation took over. They don't care about future. If they did, why do we have such a saddled debt in this nation? Why do we mortgage our homes? The purpose of a parent that has children is to leave a legacy both in thought, spirit, and riches for their children and their children's children. But what do? You mortgage your houses so you leave nothing for your kids. They always see these bumper stickers around, "I'm spending my children's inheritance." That is from the pit of hell, that attitude. Parents like that make me sick. When I buy a rifle, you know what I do when I buy a rifle? I think, this is going to be in the hands of my son or my daughter one day. I don't have a lot. I don't have land. I don't have much. But what riches I build up are not for the state, are not for me to squander in my twilight days living a second childhood. They are to pass on to my children, like the knowledge that I am sharing with you, so that they can use them to stay free and to pass on to their children. We have lost that concept in America. We have sold our souls for momentary sexual and entertainment gratification. That is what is wrong with this sick, sick nation. And there will be no revival in Sodom and Gomorrah as long as America thinks like that. And God has spanked us and will continue to spank us until the patriots in this country get up off their butts and stop thinking about their checking account and their IRAs and start thinking about their children and grandchildren's future and stop being selfish and turn back to God. All the gas masks, all the ammo, the greatest rifles, all the magazines, all the training in the world will be for nothing if you don't train your children to be God-fearing patriots. This nation is done because of laziness, selfishness, and sexual perversion. People turn away from God not because they don't believe in God for scientific reasons. They turn away from God because they don't want to be judged for their sexual and selfish desires and habits. And I'm talking about 90% of the people sitting in pews. They go there just to say, "Hey, I go to a church." It's a social function now. And I don't see a chance for revival, but I'm just one man. I'm one human. I'm yelling out for things. Colossians 1:13, "Who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins." That's right, Scotty 38. Until we return to the Bible, not churches, until we return to the Lord Jesus Christ, not what is it, 40 days of purpose or the latest craze in some stupid church system you're in. Turn back to the gospel, the word of God itself. This movement's not going to do anything. It's just going to be an endless cycle of oppression, domination, you know, a few victories here and there until the end of time, until the Lord gets tired of it and he kills everybody, until there isn't one righteous man left or woman. So until you patriots get on your knees and accept the fact that this isn't single issue. I love the Second Amendment guys. God bless them. They've been at it longer than anybody else. They saw the writing on the wall. They've been carrying this burden for longer than anybody I know. Even you guys that used to like the NRA? I don't have anything to do with them anymore. I'm not saying what you've done has been a waste of time, but I'm saying that unless you do more, it won't be enough. It won't be enough. And this Tea Party movement, I laugh at them sometimes. Not all of them. There's some solid ones. I mean, in the beginning, when we started going to the Tea Party things, they would let preachers get up and speak. They would let maniacs like me get up and speak. Now they won't even let us inside the room. We're relegated outside to having tables where we sell our books and hand out pamphlets. Because it's been co-opted by the Republican Party, which is what I said it was. If you were listening two and a half years ago, or whenever this ridiculous thing started, I said the Republicans are going to take it over. They're not stupid. They're just going to shut up and let Obongo ruin the country bad enough that you people will vote for anybody with an R in front of their name again. It's not about Republican, Democrat. It's not about single issues. It's not even about abortion versus anti-abortion. It's about righteousness versus everything else. And if you're militia, when you train, if you don't build on that, yeah, sure, you might have an effect. God can use you. God can use heathens. God can use our enemies for the purpose of victory in His plan. I'm not saying He won't use you. But where will you be standing on Judgment Day if that was your motivation? If your motivation was just so you can keep the coolest machine gun you've ever wanted, and you didn't care about liberty for all men, where are you? And I'm here to tell you, folks, if you're aligning yourselves with these single-issue people, they're going to leave you in a moment. We've seen a lot of it here in the past 6 months. We've had people leave quietly. We've had people leave boisterously. We have a person now who's just making a huge ruckus, and they're single-issue people. Maybe two issues, but they don't grasp the whole concept. And then the day of strife, when the bullets are flying, the babies are crying, and the women are fixing your wounds, these people will not be there for you. Because they will either make agreements that will get them what they want on their single or secondary issues, or they will turn you in. Not all of them are traitors, but a lot of them are. A lot of them are. A lot of these people will come to you and say, oh, I'm with you 100%. But then when you start talking to him, you find out, oh, well, they're only into it because they like to go shooting or hunting. When you talk about history or liberty or the church, they don't want to hear it. They want to come to. They only show up to the trainings where you're punching holes in paper at 100 yards so they could brag about their cloverleaf group. I'm not saying turn away from these people, but keep them at arm's length. Try and educate them. Turn them into little warning groups or something, but don't let them close to you. A solid core of Bible-believing, Jesus-fearing, God-loving, history-studying, gospel-reading patriots can do a lot. The Lord will use you if you honor Him and show that you are truly doing this for the right cause. He will gladly reach down to you and use you in the gap and for the furtherance of liberty. But He's not going to bless you if all you care about is your pocketbook and your gun safe. Liberty is far more important than that. Not liberty just for America, but liberty for the entire world. I'm not saying we have to bring liberty to the world, but we need to be a shining light on a hill. We have to show them the example once again of what a few oppressed people can do to tyranny. Let the globe go the way it wants to. But we're in this for the freedom of all men, regardless of race, creed, or color. Our enemies are enemies of liberty for all people. We're not just fighting corporations. We're not just fighting people who want to line their pockets. We're fighting people who want to enslave the entire world. First, we've got to free ourselves here. That's what we're responsible for, your family, your neighborhood, your church. So folks, if you like what you're hearing here, go to dutchjones.tk and help out the cause. God bless you in all you do, and remember that the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord alone, and unless you're on His side, you're going to end up dead. You may still go to heaven, but your children will be slaves and whores for your enemies. Is that what you want? You want your sons to work in the fields and your daughters to be concubines? Wake up, America. More specifically, wake up, patriots. You 3-8% or whatever it is. Stop being selfish and turn to the Lord. Olema says amen. It starts here. It starts in your heart. We'll be back tomorrow with a little more mechanical and less spiritual, but tell your friends about this episode of the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Send them to the link and tell them to listen. It's important this message gets out. Not because of me, not to raise money, but because if this message doesn't get out, we are doomed. We are doomed to more generations of slavery. I could go on for another hour, but my voice is giving out, and I got to eat. I got to feed my family. We'll be back. God bless you. I couldn't do it without you guys listening and spreading the word.
I tell you what you do, man. You just keep that angle arm straight, man. Y'all put your left hand still, man. Just speed it the hell up.